Welcome to Movie Heads. This is George, and I'm glad to talk to you guys again. Welcome back. So in this episode, we're going to be talking about The Godfather. And this is one of my favorite movies. This is actually the movie that got me into movies and wanting to make movies. And it's always been a throwback to me as far as referencing back to making movies. I remember in my taking film school, I remember when I started making movies on my own through that with other students and using their equipment and everything was always a blast because I didn't have to pay for it. So it was all free stuff. But one thing that I always went back to that was always there was The Godfather. And because for me, that was the perfect setup. No matter how you lay it out, that montage scene towards the end, when all the heads of the five families are getting killed, oh man, that just started something in movies that you just see it constantly over and over again. Pulp Fiction does it, other movies do it. I mean, Pulp Fiction does it with just a different twist, but if you think about it, we're still talking about montages at the end of a movie here, and The Godfather really shows that really well. Anyways. So, Godfather, that wanted to pick that as my topic because, like I said, that was one of my very first favorite movies ever that I saw to its completion. And I don't even remember how old I was, but I was a kid. I do remember that. So, the movie was made in 1972. It runs for about 2 hours and 55 minutes. It's almost three hours solid. Of course, if there's a pee-pee break in between, then there you go straight to 3 hours, but that's up to you if you want to put the... Back then, they used to do an intermission in the movie theaters when the movie would run that long. I remember seeing the movie, and all of a sudden, if it's been about 2 hours, right, they'd stop the film, and right on the big screen, it would say intermission. They'd give you like 2 minutes, and everybody would run out of the theater. You know, only thing is, you'd have to make sure somebody stayed behind, otherwise you'd lose your seats. So someone had to always stay behind. So you went to run back and come in, and it could be like maybe 45 minutes left of this movie. But back then they had to do that. That was, I guess, the policy of the movie theaters. And then, of course, later on, they didn't care. That was out the window. They didn't care anymore about that. All of a sudden, now it went straight to boom. Now you had to stick this out. You can take a leak. Go take a leak. You're going to miss part of the movie. That's not our problem. And they don't care anymore. And of course, now with DVDs, we can pause it left and right. So if you have a pissing problem, then no problem. You could pause it 100 times during the movie. So how about that? Things have changed. So anyways, so the movie, of course, is directed by Francis Ford Coppola. Awesome director, by the way. Very family-oriented type director. You know, the misfortune of... I don't want to go too much into his other movies because we're going to talk about that in other episodes. But, I'm talking about Godfather 3 is that deserve a lot of talk, but now it's some really uplifting news that I just heard about the Godfather 3 that they're going to do a re-edit of the beginning and the end of that movie. But, that I'm going to save for when I go into that episode, but that's just something really nice to look forward to. It's going to be re-released this year at Christmas in the theaters. And this is something that Francis Ford Coppola has actually been fighting to get his own directorial vision out there on how this movie should have ended. So this is going to be very exciting. And I honestly believe that that's going to be the setup for another round of Godfather films, just like they do the Star Wars films or the Rocky films. You know, I think another saga and threes are going to come around. That's what I honestly believe. In fact, I'm thinking Godfather 4, The Next Generation. Boom. Right there. Or the new generation. Whichever. Anyways, going back to what we're talking about here. So, the producer of the Godfather films, the first one anyways, his name was Al Ruddy. This poor guy endured hell going through this movie. But I'll go over that a little bit later. The cinematographer, of course, was Gordon Willis. Very good cinematographer. He was had a reputation of filming in very dim light, which is probably what made him a savior for The Godfather without even knowing it. And the other casting members, of course, are the actors. Of course, the mighty Marlon Brando and Al Pacino. This was one of his actually very big first acting jobs ever. And then James Caan, Robert Duvall. They're not even Italian. They're Irish, but they passed as Italians. Well, one of them did anyways. Actually, Robert Duvall did play an Irishman. I forgot. He came in as an adopted child. But James Caan pulled it off pretty good. And Diane Keaton, Abe Vigoda. You know, this guy, he looked like he was already 90 when he made this movie. What's funny about that is that even up to the decades that went by, I swear, I always thought every time I heard about Abe Vigoda that that guy was dead. And he was very much alive. All the way up until now. I mean, even up to now in my old age of myself. I mean, this guy just recently passed away. I mean, I was even like, whoa, he's still not dead? I mean, not to be mean, but, you know, this guy really lived a full life. That's good for him, man. Good for him. Anyways. And then we also have Talia Shire, which is, of course, Francis Ford Coppola's sister. He didn't even want her to be in the movie, actually. Because he said she was too good looking. Yeah, I don't know. Well, that's everyone's opinion, of course. And then John Cazale, of course, you know, the famous John Cazale. He also came out in The Deer Hunter. He was an asshole in The Deer Hunter, but hey, you know what? That was the good of his acting. And interesting little fact about John Cazale that I found out about is that he actually was one step away from marrying Meryl Streep back in the day. Yeah, they were very much in love. But unfortunately, John Cazale did pass away from cancer. Sadly, he never even actually got to see The Deer Hunter when it came out. So that's a nice little love story. If you ever get a chance to see a documentary about John Cazale and Meryl Streep, you can check it out on YouTube. I saw it once myself. Great documentary. Great documentary. Anyways, for those who haven't seen The Godfather, you definitely have to see it. You cannot live on this planet in your lifetime and not see The Godfather. And then much less, of course, Godfather 2 and 3. So the premise here of the storyline is that the Godfather, who of course they call Don Vito Corleone, he's basically the head of the Corleone Mafia family in New York. And of course he is at the event of his daughter's wedding in this movie. And Michael, who's basically Vito's youngest son, and he's also been decorated the, I think he's in a World War II Marine or something, and they presented him. He presented himself at the wedding with in full uniform because he was a war hero apparently, and but he's definitely uninterested in being any part of the mafia at the beginning of this movie, or the family business. But we all know how powerful Vito Corleone is, and the kind that you know, give him respect. And of course, there's always these ruthless gangsters, of course, that are always circling around him like bees at a freaking hornet's nest. But anyways. Of course, it's the Don's influence that keeps that going. And as far as the Don Corleone is concerned, he's been convinced that, you know what, maybe Michael should stay out of this business because at least I can have one squeaky clean son out there. So I guess he got convinced in his own mind that this is a good thing. So that's why that kind of weighed out to that when Michael came around. Of course, that went the other way, and he was reluctant to not perform his own revenge on his daughter's murder, or attempted murder, should I say. And in doing so, it started a whole mob war, and he had to leave the United States and live in Italy for like a year or so. And it's just a whole big mess, you know, but that's what The Godfather is all about. And it's a great movie. It's a great Corleone family, you know, saga. So check it out if you can. And what's funny is that for those of you who have seen the movie numerous times, there are some interesting facts about this movie that actually are interesting beyond what I've already known for years, but things always come to light later on. Basically, there was a shot actually with Vito Corleone when he comes back home. And I don't know if you remember, this is after he got shot. He was in the hospital, and they bring him back to the hospital, and they're bringing him up the stairs in a stretcher, right? Well, apparently, he was a big prankster, you know, on the set. So he had the prop guys put all these weights underneath him. So it made it super heavy for these guys to lift him and carry him up the stairs. So when you see that scene in the movie of those guys carrying him up the stairs, it's like double the weight. And it probably makes sense as to why those guys look like they're suffering carrying him up the stairs. So check it out. It's in the movie. So if you check it out, that prank is actually on the cut. So check it out. That's actually funny. So going into the other part of The Godfather, of course, which follows up on that whole episode on weights and pranking the actual cast. Luca Brasi, this guy, man, he was the main hitman that I guess was very loyal to The Godfather. Whenever Vito Corleone needed something, there was Luca Brasi right there, ready to go. Extremely loyal guy, you could tell he is. And he would never convert. unless the Godfather told him to do so, which he did, to throw off the Tattaglias, which didn't work, as we can see. But what's the guy's real name is Lenny Montana, and this guy was actually in the Mafia. And what's funny is that in the scene where he wanted to talk to him at his daughter's wedding, where he seems very nervous, and when he's talking to Marlon Brando, and he kind of repeats things over when he's like, on the day of your daughter's wedding, on the day of your daughter's wedding, and bringing their first child, be a masculine child. That scene. Anyways, once that scene goes through, he was actually nervous in real life. So instead of doing another cut, Francis Ford Coppola was actually very happy with it. He said it was genuine. He seemed very really nervous, and it seemed realistic, and that made the final cut. The scene with him actually practicing his lines turned out to be the actual scene itself. So how do you know about that? That's something new that I found out later on. And as far as James Caan goes, you know, they had to improvise his part where he throws the FBI photographer. I think you remember this scene when they're outside the wedding. He gets upset at one of the photographers, and he throws his camera on the floor and it smashes. And then he drops a couple of bucks, you know, to help him pay for another camera, I guess. I mean, I don't know if that was actually the amount that's going to cover the charge, but who knows. But what's funny is that the actors... reaction of fright being frightened was actually genuine. James Caan improvised that part, which actually threw off the camera guy that owned the camera. So he kind of, when he jumps back in that scene, it's actually genuine. He did not know that he was going to do that. And he actually did break the camera, and he did actually repay the owner, because he said that's how we do things. And I thought that was interesting too. And another thing with Marlon Brando, as far as he goes, basically when he was offered this role, he had to still turn in an audition tape. I remember I saw this quite a few times. I actually saw the clips on YouTube first without explanation, so I kind of knew what I was looking at. But what I didn't know, though, is that he purposely was trying to make himself look like a bulldog. So what he did was he would stuff his cheeks with cotton, you know, and this was for the audition. And then when he actually got hired for the role, which was funny because Francis Ford Coppola always stated that he always knew it was for Marlon Brando, and he was going to fight for him to get the role no matter what. And so whether he auditioned or not, something tells me he would have still got the role anyways. But so when they started the filming, he actually wore a mouthpiece that he had his own dentist make, apparently, that would give him that look. And supposedly this thing that the dentist made, it's actually on display at the American History Museum. It's somewhere, it's like a moving image in somewhere in Queens, New York. Yeah, you know what? That's going to be on my list. That's going to be one of the things I got to do before I die. That's on the bucket list for sure. I have to see these dentures. I have to. Anyways, moving on. And the cinematographer, Gordon Willis, that's the guy's name. He actually was labeled as the Prince of Darkness when it came to cinematography, because he was known for his sets to be underlit all the time. It was just his thing. You know, every cinematographer has their way of shooting. Well, this guy, that was his thing. So Paramount Pictures, they wasn't too happy about this, you know. So the way they approached Francis Ford Coppola is that these shots that they were turning in, it's too dark, he said. They couldn't see the characters well. They didn't like the lighting. They wanted him fired, actually. They wanted to consider him out. So what happened was that Coppola and Willis, the actual cinematographer, together, they went ahead and they emphasized to the studio that this low-lit set lighting was actually to emphasize that the Corleone family was a very shady family, and that these kind of lightings would represent those dealings. So, and they fell for it, these idiots. That's movie idiots for you, these guys. I swear, they're the big boys with the money, but they're not too creative when it comes to it, you know. So they're easily convinced, and that's what a director can do, the beauty of that. You know, I always felt bad for Marlon Brando because I read a book. It was kind of the making of the Godfather films. And when it went over the making of the Godfather, it went into a lot of detail about all the hell that this poor director, Francis Ford Coppola, had to go through. It's kind of hard to be motivated when you know that the movie studios doesn't want you there to begin with. And they're just hoping for you to fuck up so they can go ahead and hire another director. I mean, can you imagine being under that kind of stress? Oh, man, that would just suck. I mean, it takes the whole fun out of it. It takes your will to be creative. So I couldn't even imagine that. But, yeah, there was a lot of friction between him and Paramount Pictures. Enough to where they were thinking the whole time that they were citing him for his inability to stay on schedule, number one. This is even before they knew how I was working with him, that he had unnecessary expenses that were going on and that the production and the casting was a big mistake. Well, come to find out now at the end of this movie, when it was completed and done, that he had all the actors correct on the money as far as matching their characters, as well as the film being ahead of schedule and not only that, being under budget. So there, stick your tongue out to them on that. Huh. Well, being on the fact of the whole thing on budget, Marlon Brando actually was, of course, probably the highest paid actor in that movie. Well, it's funny on the another interesting fact about this actor is there's an opening scene where he's holding a stray cat in his lap and just he's petting this cat away while he's talking. And what's funny is he found that cat on the lot of Paramount Pictures. It was a stray cat, and he just decided to bring it in and include it into the scene. Now, well, the funny part is that on the boom mics, the cat was purring so loud that they couldn't hear the Marlon Brando's lines when he would speak them out. The purring of the cat was overpowering his lines, so they ended up having to re-loop his voice over the action. Can you imagine that? Well, because some cat, his purring was so loud, because if you hear the movie, there's times where you can't even understand what Don Corleone's saying because he's talking in such a muffled tone. You can't even understand him. So I can see the need for that. So it's a good thing they redid that part of it, because the cat otherwise would have had the main part of it. Also, you know, he was terrible at memorizing his lines. I mean, Brando came with a lot of baggage, man. If you think about it, people had to hold up cue cards on their chest while the camera was facing from the other direction, or putting them up on the wall behind the actor so it looks like he was talking to him, but he was actually reading the lines off of the wall. This was basically the whole movie. I guess he just had a really bad memory problem. He couldn't remember his lines. Yeah, gotta do what you gotta do. Well, this other thing too is that they were saying that in the scene where he's basically talking to his godson, you know, Johnny Fontaine, you know, the famous actor, where he goes crying to him that he wants this part and that the director wouldn't give it to him because he knows it'll make him famous and that he has no chance of the part. So he's over here crying on the desk. And at that point right there where Marlon Brando, playing Don Corleone, of course, shakes him up and then smacks him in the face. He actually did that right there on impulse. That was not in the script. So when he did that, he actually took the actor by surprise. So his reaction at that moment, if you look at his face, he actually looks confused at that moment. I believe that actor's, his name is Al Martino. That's the actual guy's name. So check that scene out again. You'll see that that's actually a real thing. And what's funny is that he mentioned afterwards to Francis Ford Coppola, I didn't know whether to laugh or cry. So going to another interesting fact about the movie, of course, the famous horse head scene with the director. Apparently, the scream that director let off was actually real. Apparently, he really did not know what to expect when he lifted those sheets. Apparently, this is, I don't know if it's true or not, but this is the myth behind that scene. And that what you got right there in the can from him screaming like that was authentic and it was genuine, that he was really actually scared at that moment. So I don't know if that's true or not. Who knows? But it's an interesting story. So basically, the other thing that was true, though, about that scene was that the animal rights activists, they were protesting against that horse head scene. This was true. And they protested against it. And what's funny is that Francis Ford Coppola told Variety magazine in an interview that there's all these people getting killed in the movie, but nobody gives a shit about that. All they care about is some horse. in the whole movie. So what does that tell you about humanity? Oh my God. Anyways, it turns out that he kept trying to make everybody understand that this one horse head, these are one out of thousands of horses that get slaughtered for pet food. In fact, the manufacturer who did all those slaughters were at least up to 200 horses a day just to feed those little doggies. So I bet you the guys that were protesting were dog lovers on top of that. So there, you want them to eat or you want them to starve? You decide. Anyways. Here's another very interesting fact. I don't know if some of you guys might not even know who this is, but there's an actor, well, from the past named Orson Welles. For you filmmakers out there, dedicated, very good filmmakers, Citizen Kane, is that ringing any bells? Rosebud. Get it? Well, anyways, if you are a very good filmmaker, well, that doesn't matter. Whether you're a good one or not even a good one, you definitely know who Orson Welles is and Citizen Kane. It's kind of like one giving hand to the other when it comes to filmmaking. So that's always been a platform that somebody likes to look back at, and I've been one of those too. And but what's interesting is Orson Welles was dying to get the part as Don Vito Corleone. He wanted it so bad that he was offering even to lose weight. And that guy was big, okay? But Coppola felt that, even though he was a Welles fan too, and here's the funny part, is that Coppola was a huge Welles fan from his movies. In fact, I think he admired his movies and influenced him to want to make movies. He actually had to turn, Coppola had to turn Welles down because he had already had Marlon Brando in his mind for this movie, in this role, and I completely understand that. I've made some movies, you know, I mean, very, very little short films, but whenever you have an actor in your head already for a certain role that, and you can make it happen, believe me, that's your vision going on the screen and that's what you want. So I can understand that when I see these things being mentioned about that kind of effect. So anyways, yeah, he wouldn't give it to him. So isn't that something? Mr. Welles himself. Jesus Christ. Oh my gosh. And it looks like the line, the famous line from The Godfather, of course, the "I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse," that was selected actually by the American Film Institute, and it's on the list of one of the top 100 movie quotes. It came in at number 2. Did anybody guess what number 1 was? Yeah, I know that the new generation probably has no idea what the heck I'm going to be talking about here, but for those of you that do know what I'm talking about, when I mention Gone with the Wind, all right, anybody know Clark Gable here? Anybody, am I leading up to anything here? Remember, frankly, my dear, I don't give a damn. Remember that line? Well, that came from Gone with the Wind, the movie that was made back in 1939. Yep. And in color. That was amazing. And let me tell you, the color was amazing. If you ever get a chance to see that movie, that is some great filmmaking and some great historical piece on top of that. So check it out when you can. Okay, Gone with the Wind. Great movie. Huge book, too, if you ever get a chance to read it. So I also found out basically Francis Ford Coppola, his original initial director's cut of the movie, when he turned it in, it was a record 2 hours and 6 minutes long, which is a lot shorter than what it normally is now. But the reason that is Paramount Pictures, of course, stepped in like always, and they rejected his version because they felt that the movie deserved a longer cut with more scenes about the family themselves. So he had to go ahead and do a final release version, which was nearly about probably about an extra 50 minutes longer than the original cut that Coppola had in mind. So there you go. So because of that, they made it longer. And what happened was it was so successful that the next two movies were purposely made to be, almost be 3 hours each for that same reason. So I guess it became like a superstitious thing. Like if you don't make this movie 3 hours, it's not going to be good at all. Period. So in essence to that, basically, it turns out that the movie itself, the early buzz was so positive when they were making this movie that they actually had already planned the sequel even before the movie came out or it was even finished. But that's what's upsetting is when you know that the Paramount Pictures is giving such a hard time to to the director, which of course is Francis Ford Coppola, and having him shadowed by another director that might be hired when once they fire him. That having that daily stress and daily confrontations with the movie studios about changing this, changing that, about that they don't want that actor, they don't want this actor. They wanted to fire Al Pacino. I don't know how many times, and somehow Francis Ford Coppola was able to sneak his screen test in there every time, and still had him show up everywhere. And the one thing that convinced the movie studio finally that Al Pacino was correct was the first killing scene where he shoots Sollozzo and the detective in the head. That scene right there is what made it for Al Pacino. That was it. Once they saw that, the studios was like, whoa, he's definitely the man for this. And they were convinced. So, see, if they would have just listened to Francis Ford Coppola to begin with, the man had the vision. He would have known. He already knew. And that's all you needed from the director himself. So, that was interesting, you know. And it's funny, too, is that the character, when he based it off of Vito Corleone, when he knew that Marlon Brando was going to play that character, it was actually off of a real mobster named Frank Costello. Okay, basically what happened was Marlon Brando had seen an interview with this mobster Frank Costello on TV, and then he imitated his voice, and it came out with that husky whisper is what they were calling it within the movie. So now you know how he came up with that movie. You know, the other fact too is that Stanley Kubrick, the famous Stanley Kubrick, one of another best directors out there, of course, The Shining, you know, 2001 Space Odyssey, Full Metal Jacket, man, I can just go on and on. He thought the film, The Godfather, had some of the best cast ever and could be the best movie ever made. You know, of course, for his time, you know, who knows if that's still, it would be the same up till today, but still, that's quite an honor coming from another director like that. So there's something I bet you didn't know. Huh. Now, getting to another angle of this whole thing, basically to the writer's aspect, Mario Puzo, let's not forget him, he's the guy that actually invented this story, The Godfather, based off of probably some Italian family, like I was telling you. But the character, Johnny Fontaine, was actually thought to be based off of Frank Sinatra. But he claimed, and when I say he, I'm talking about Mario Puzo, claimed that it wasn't, okay? Now, Frank Sinatra was known at times to hang out with mobster types, and there's even pictures of him hanging out with them, but he always denied it, of course, but it was widely assumed that it was about Frank Sinatra, and so, of course, Sinatra was furious about this, you know, and furious enough to one day in a restaurant, I guess he met up with Mario Puzo, and he screamed all these vulgar terms and threats at Puzo, and apparently he was completely opposed to the film. And, of course, because of all this backlash and everything, you know, that the Fontaine role in the film was scaled down and they only gave him a couple of lines instead of giving him a bigger role like that. So obviously they made an impact on how they wanted to do the role of Johnny Fontaine. So there you go. Now, here's something that I bet you didn't know. You know, talk about craziness when you find out things behind the scenes of a great movie, especially like one like The Godfather. You can only imagine that there's all kinds of little stories in the background. So now there's one of the actors. His name is Gianni Russo. Now, you might know him as Carlo Rizzi. Now, if you don't know who that is, on top of that, this is the guy that married the daughter at the beginning of the movie. Remember the daughter's wedding? Okay, well, the husband, the groom, that's Gianni Russo, okay? Other words known as Carlo. He's married into the family now. So that guy, he actually had connections into the organized criminal world and with mobsters. What's funny is that he used that to get him the movie role of Carlo Rizzo. He wanted it that bad. He turned in his own audition tape, okay, mind you, to the producers. What's funny is that Marlon Brando, he was against having him for Carlo. He didn't like him. He didn't think he acted well at all, and he refused to have him on. But what's funny is that word of this got over to Russo, of course, and he was pissed off. So now, right now, he's went over to Brando's house, met up with him, and he threatened him. And what's funny is that his reckless anger towards Brando actually turned out to be like a blessing in disguise, because Brando thought he was acting, like doing a role to show him how tough he can actually be. And what's funny is that it convinced Brando enough to tell Francis Ford Coppola is that, you know what? That guy would be good for the movie. And he got the part, of course. Can you believe that? Wow. Worked out. You know, those who know Francis Ford Coppola know that he's a very family-oriented guy. You know, he loves making movies, especially, you know, when it comes to Italian descent. But what's funny is that people thought that Francis Ford Coppola wanted to do The Godfather. And what's funny is that he actually took on that role because he was actually in debt with Warner Brothers. Apparently, he was in debt up to about $400,000. I guess it was, it overran off of George Lucas's film. I guess he tried to produce THX-1138. This is a movie that was made back in 1971. So, of course, that put American Zoetrope, which was the movie studios that Francis Ford Coppola was trying to create. And what happened was he got approached, of course, by Paramount Pictures to do The Godfather. And without hesitation, of course, George Lucas urged him to take the job. And that's why he took it, because he needed money to pay that back that bad debt with Warner Brothers. So he kind of killed the at first, thinking, man, it wasn't a passion of his. But then, you know what? Once he got a hold of that movie, it was his. So that's enough said for me. Now going into salaries, as far as how much actors get paid in these movies, I mean, come on, you would think James Caan, Robert Duvall, you got Diane Keaton, Al Pacino, you got these fantastic actors, right? I mean, these actors get millions and millions of dollars in movies today. You wouldn't believe what they got paid for The Godfather. And I'm not kidding about this, okay? In order. At the same rate. See, I'll tell you right now, Al Pacino, James Caan, and Diane Keaton, for instance, okay? Those three on the film, we're all paid the same amount. And that amount is, there was a drum roll, there'd be one right here, and it comes out to $35,000 each. Can you believe that? $35,000? Man, that would be like a humongous insult to these actors today. They probably light their cigarettes with a $35,000 bill if they had one. I mean, come on. Can you imagine? That's how you know their shortcomings, when they still have their nobility in them. You know what I'm saying? They're still humble about their acting. They'll do it for that little amount. Absolutely. There's another thing I bet you didn't know about, was when they were throwing the premieres around for The Godfather. Apparently, there was a couple scenes that James Caan shot that were actually very good, and he gave it his all in some of these, these scenes that he was talking about. Apparently, he gave it all his depth, and the reaction to his father's shooting was one of them, and it was cut from the film. So, at one of the premieres, James Caan, of course, he approached Robert Evans, which was involved with the editing of the movie, and he literally told him, verbatim, "Hey, you cut my fucking part out." That's what he told him. And it was about, from what I hear, apparently it was about 45 minutes of his character was cut out of that film. And I'm dying to know what those scenes are, man. Are they somewhere? I mean, I pray to God they bring them back. I haven't seen those deleted scenes for that yet. So bring that back, please. Release them again with all these new stuff in it. I mean, people need to know this stuff. I need to know this stuff. This is the extra stuff that they keep releasing DVDs for again and again. So let's get that going. Now, there's one famous line in The Godfather, okay, that I know everybody makes fun of, and that's the line that James Caan gives out to Al Pacino when he's talking to him about his suit, when he goes up to him and he says, "But a bing, you're gonna get blood all over your Ivy League suit." Okay, now, what's interesting is that James Caan got that from an acquaintance of his, which was a real-life mobster by the name of Carmine Persicchio. Now, this is true. He just basically took his bada bing and included it into the script, and he came up with that line. That was pretty genius of him. Look how famous he became. Way to go, James. Now to go even further into the behind-the-scenes stuff that people don't hear about is, what's funny is there apparently there was a lot of mooning going on throughout the set of The Godfather. apparently mostly done by James Caan and Robert Duvall. Apparently they started it, and it just carried around by other actors. Even Al Pacino got in on the act at one point. So apparently there was a lot of mooning going on throughout the film. I wish they would have got that on video, and or, you know, get into the DVDs, behind the scenes stuff. Man, that stuff is classic, man. What's going on here, man? Come on, don't talk about this stuff and not have it on video to the show. Let's do this. Come on. It's kind of frustrating to talk about it and know that you're not really going to know who the moon champion was of the behind the scenes of The Godfather. Ugh. So apparently, during the making of the movie, The Godfather, there was an actual crime boss by the name of Joe Colombo, who had his own organization. He was an Italian-American. He believed in civil rights. He was the League of It, actually. He started a campaign to actually start, you know, stop the film from being made of The Godfather. And this is according to Robert Evans, one of the other producers. And Colombo basically called his house and threatened the producer's family, you know. And with that happening, he said it made Italian Americans look bad. For those trying to be politicians, it gave them a bad name, bad reputation, that it was very anti-Italian. And these were his feelings. So, like I said, they threatened to protest and disrupt all the filming. So basically, Al Ruddy, which is why I said this guy's job must have been hell on earth just to get this movie done, had to meet up with this guy, this Colombo guy. Who demanded certain terms, basically not to have words like mafia or Cosa Nostra mentioned at all in the film. And what was funny was that those words were mentioned throughout the film, so they had to scratch all that out of the script. And that was one of the main agreements from that guy, Joe Colombo, the mob boss, about not having that included into the movie, and then they wouldn't have a problem with the movie being made. So they went with that. So they were able to come to some kind of a term. Personally, I think that was dumb, but... Well, what are you going to do? Hey, you got the movie made, right? And that's all that matters. Apparently, George Lucas was around the set a lot of The Godfather because Lucas was actually looked up to Francis Ford Coppola as a filmmaker. And George Lucas was really good about getting him, you know, his stills and getting him dailies for his movies. He was kind of like an apprentice to Coppola, I guess you could say. And what's funny is that there's one part where all the bad guys, they call it going to the mattresses, where they got to be hiding out for a while and because something happened within the family. So during this scene, there's a montage. And during this montage, they're showing a lot of pictures of black and white pictures, actually, of shootings, of mafia crime bosses that got killed or henchmen that got killed. And in one of the shots was an actual case of a man called, his name was Frank Nitti, otherwise known as the Enforcer, which was Al Capone's right-hand man. Now, George Lucas put an actual picture within that montage of the actual scene, which in fact turned out to be a committed suicide with a gunshot to the head. So obviously it wasn't that violent as they thought. But anyways, he still made the part to the movie. So I thought that was interesting that Lucas threw that in the middle of it and nobody even knew about that, but it was historic. So it's funny that Francis Ford Coppola also, when it comes to the violence of the film, he didn't want that much violence in the movie. He really didn't. The whole horse head thing, he didn't even want that in the movie, but it was in the novel, and because it was so recognized that he knew he had to put it into the movie because it was iconic. So there, sometimes you just gotta give in. Just to give you an idea how some of the actors were very dedicated to making this movie. Number one, basically, I think I would start with Marlon Brando. That guy, believe it or not, he was standing behind Francis Ford Coppola 100%, and he believed in his vision, he believed in his directing ability, enough to where one time Paramount Pictures actually, and this came through senior management, they were very dissatisfied with the early rushes that they were turning in, okay? So they were turning in rushes every day, and the studios were just not happy with them, you know? So they were already talking about replacing Francis Ford Coppola. What's funny is that they were replacing with this other director by the name of Elia Kazan, some foreign director, I guess. I don't even know exactly what she's made, but basically she's basically known to work notoriously with Marlon Brando as difficult as he was. And so basically Brando got notice of this, that this might happen. And he made a bold statement and made it very clear that he said, look, that he would quit the film if Coppola was fired. And he made that very clear. He said, if Coppola doesn't work, I don't work. And that was it. So the studio right away, they backed down and everything went back to normal and the filming proceeded. So there you go. Sometimes it takes the threat from the main actor to get the movie going again. Isn't that something? So Coppola at one point was approached again at one point by the studio saying that there was not too much action that they were satisfied with within the film. So they were thinking of hiring an action director to finish the job. Well, of course, Coppola didn't like that. And he got together with Evans, which was the producer at the time, and basically with his son at the time, Giancarlo Coppola, they developed a scene where you see Connie and Carlo fighting in their apartment. You know, when she starts smashing all the dishes and throwing everything around and the wine and everything, and then he takes off his belt and literally beats the crap out of her. Well, they came up with that scene and filmed it, and once it was shown, the studios was pleased enough that they let Coppola finish the whole film. So he made sure that he put in his action part and proved to them that he can do it if he wanted to. Good for him, man. Now, once it got to the advertising of the film, when it came out to making posters and things and commercials and billboards and all that, there was a problem with the iconic puppet strings over the logo, which was the iconic logo that it is now. Where you see the hands and you see the puppet strings, and then to the left you see where it says Mario Puzo's The Godfather. Well, the studios did not want Mario Puzo's name above the title, and they did not want the logo with the puppet strings either. Well, Francis Ford Coppola insisted on keeping it in. And he, I mean, and up to where he was fighting with the producers and even had Mario Puzo in on it too, since he co-wrote the script himself, he felt he had the right to make that decision. So they did. And thank God they did, because now we have this beautiful, beautiful title with the iconic logo of the puppet strings and Mario Puzo's name above the title, as it should be, since he did came up, you know, with the whole movie idea to begin with. So good for them. Won over them again. Man, I'm telling you, a constant battle with the movie studios back and forth. Man, kudos to Coppola, man. Seriously. In close to closing of this whole film, basically, it's a fantastic film. Thank God it was made. I bet, believe it or not, it was very close to not being made because of the studios being so stubborn about a lot of things. And thank God Francis Ford Coppola stuck to his guns. Thank God he had loyal actors that stuck behind him on top of that. That's why the movie was made. But a lot of it also goes to, and people don't know this too much about the producer, Al Ruddy. That was the guy's name. He dealt with a lot of the bullshit behind the movie, and which was dealing with the actual mafia himself, you know, being followed home by mafia members, notes being left at his house that they would kill his family if they didn't stop filming now. And this guy endured so much that he literally made a statement that it was the most miserable film I can think of to make. Nobody enjoyed one day of it. Man, that sucks. Can you imagine feeling like that about a movie that you were involved with? It was like, where's the joy? I mean, maybe he gets joy now after all these years and seeing how successful the movie wasn't, and maybe it makes it that it was worth it, you know, with all that bullshit. But who knows, maybe from his aspect it wasn't worth it at all, but we'll never ever know. But and that's being said, one thing that I also wanted to mention was the beauty of editing when it comes to movies. The scene with Michael Corleone when he shoots Sollozzo and the Captain McCluskey in the head in the restaurant scene where he needs to eliminate them so that takes the threat away from his father being killed. Well, when they edited that scene, they purposely put a sound effect of the subway train that went by. And it heightened the scene's tension. They did that on purpose. You know, the studio thought that was in there by accident. And they thought, what a coincidence. That was wonderful. It went perfectly with the scene. Coppola told them that wasn't on purpose. We added that in there. That is why I am the director. And I know exactly what I'm doing. Thank you very much. Anyways, with that being said, check out The Godfather. It's a fantastic movie if you haven't seen it already. And if you have seen it, watch it again. Why not? It's the best movie ever. Okay, this is George from Movie Heads, and I will see you for episode 2 soon, which will be about Godfather 2, naturally. Take care and good night.